Thanks for downloading the free feed of Sunday Night's Main Event. If you'd like the entire show commercial-free, please sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
Mike Tyson is still a ratings draw in 2020. Dana jaw-jacks with Jon Jones and WWE decides to bring the real life of Jeff Hardy onto TV, because that's what we need right now. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday Night's Main Event, coming at you across Canada on the TSN Radio Network. My name is Jason Agnew, and this week we look back at the week of wrestling TV and look forward to NXT getting in your house. First of all, I'll recap the week of wrestling news and welcome on Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter to get a more in-depth look into TV ratings and just how much we're going to be seeing of Mike Tyson in the coming months. Then the co-host of All Elite Weekly, Joe Aguinaldo, will be along to give his thoughts on the week of wrestling TV before we cap off the show being joined by everyone's favorite barkeep, Bartender Dave, to take a look ahead to next week's NXT In Your House pay-per-view. We're off to a break and then back with your favorite 2 hours of escapism in a world that is far too serious. This is Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event. Let's get into recapping what happened this week in the world of wrestling. And it might feel like a news report from 1998. And here's well, because the man that launched WWE into the Attitude Era by having a pull apart with Cold Stone Steve Austin, his words, not mine, and then punching Shawn Michaels so he could then chew his gum while he was knocked out on his back at WrestleMania 14 in 1998. Yes, 1998, that's 22 years ago. The man that did all of that is back, and it's going to be talked about a lot in this show. Mike Tyson and Chris Jericho are looking to do a very notable program. Now, Jericho talked with ESPN's Mark Grimondi about the Mike Tyson angle from Wednesday and stated the following, quote, "Obviously, the idea is to do something more. That's the thought process. I think between both parties, what that is at the moment, we're thinking and discussing. Look, Chris Jericho versus Mike Tyson in a wrestling match, in a street fight, in a boxing match would be big. I'm not Mike Tyson. I'm not one-thousandth of Mike Tyson, but I've been boxing for 6 years. I know how to box. I could win fights on my own against people of my skill level. So if that's what he wants to do, then that works too. Whatever he feels comfortable with, I can make it good. That's what I do for a living. That's what I've been doing for 30 years. That's what, end quote. That's what Jericho said. Jericho also claimed that this is a Chris Jericho angle, and he's telling the story of his life rather than borrowing from previous angles in WWE. And one more Jericho note, despite COVID-19, he confirmed this week that the Rock and Wrestling Rager cruise is going forward. It's setting sail on February 1st to 5th, 2021 from Miami to the Bahamas. Confirmed people on it: Ted DiBiase, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Bully Ray, Candice Michelle, comedian Brad Williams, and bands Fozzy and Striper have been announced. Plus a bunch of AEW stuff, of course. But DiBiase and Jim Duggan, I'm staring at those names and thinking, that's old to be on the cruise with the potential of an infection. Now, granted, it is February 1st to 5th next year, but we shall see what point we are at with COVID-19 at that time. For those of you that enjoyed Buckle Bombs, well, you won't be seeing them in WWE anymore. PW Insider has reported, and Brian Alvarez of Wrestling Observer confirmed that the WWE has banned the move. It's unclear as to what prompted it at this particular time, but there was an incident on April 20th on Raw where Nia Jax just destroyed Kairi Sane with a buckle bomb to the middle, or maybe the bottom turnbuckle. It looked bad. But you'd think that if they were going to make this restriction, it would have happened in 2015. And of course, I'm, you know, mentioning that because it was at Night of Champions that Seth Rollins gave Sting a buckle bomb. And after looking great up to that point, just basically collapsed, and it would end Sting's career. I mean, listen, there's a lot of other things going on, but that was the move. Oh, I almost said that broke the camel's back. In this case, broke the Sting's back. And we never saw Sting in the ring again. Ratings seem to be up this week in general as SmackDown scored an average of 2.15 million viewers. That's the highest rating since April 17th. NXT and AEW also had very good weeks. AEW, 827,000 on average. NXT, 731,000 viewers on average. That is very, very solid. And I'm guessing that people have kind of, at that point, had turned off the news, tired of COVID. Now, granted, considering what's happening now with the political unrest, they're probably flipping back over to news television. But it did look good for ratings this week on WWE. Perhaps it's a manner of escapism, and, you know, that's what we try to do here on this show as well. The world is too serious, so listen to this make-believe world that we report on. After making their debut on this past week's Dynamite, AEW has announced that a sit-down interview with FTR will be conducted by Tony Schiavone this week on Dynamite. And if you're wondering why you haven't heard Nigel McGuinness's voice on WWE TV as of late, that is because he's been furloughed by the company. This took place the same time as all the mass firings and other furloughings, I suppose you would say. It happened last month, but for some reason, that these details have just surfaced. As you may have noticed on SmackDown, Drew Gulak, he was there. He's back in the WWE. I guess they managed to come to an agreement on his contract, and we reported last week that Gulak had left the company when his contract expired because he had the balls to ask for a raise during the current pandemic, which is a very bold move on his part. WWE then pulled their original offer. I guess cooler heads have prevailed, and Gulak is now back with the company. One person that is no longer with the company is Chris DeJoseph. He was one of the lead writers on SmackDown. He was let go this week. You may remember him from his on-camera appearances as Fat Guy in Thong. And no other details are available right now. By that, I mean not details of Fat Guy in Thong. I mean details of his firing. If you were hoping to see Deonna Purrazzo in AEW, I know I was, well, I'm already disappointed. She's just made the mistake of signing with Impact Wrestling. Sports Illustrated talked to Dark Side of the Ring executive Evan Husney. When asked about a third season, Husney said, "A third season is something everybody involved wants to do. Vice wants to make a season 3. Well, of course they do after those ratings. We would love to see it happen," he said, "and we're in the stages of conversation right now." He did state that the problems that Dark Side of the Ring may have is that the show deals with a lot of travel, and they'd want to go to international places like Japan for season 3, and there's a lot of uncertainty about travel at this particular time in the world. Don't get me wrong, folks. I mean, even with a successful series right now, a lot of things are not getting made. Nothing is getting made at the moment. So expect September, October, all those new shows we would normally get in the fall will not be happening. And that includes something like Dark Side of the Ring, tremendously successful. You can be sure that it got the highest ratings on Vice. It would be greenlit for another season. They just don't know how they can make that happen right now. To travel, to put these interviews in place, could be a challenge. I will say, though, there are ways around this series. A lot of this series, looking at this from a TV show producer perspective, a lot of this series is done with archival footage and with interviews. If these guys have crews that they trust in other parts of the world, you can hire freelance crews. Let's just say they mentioned Japan. So you have people in Japan that you trust that can shoot the interviews for you. You can then put up a Zoom call, of all things, of the producer's face right beside the camera asking the questions. It's not as good. Interpersonal connection is not as good, but the producer can still ask the questions and guide the interview along. This is being done all over the world right now for news reports, and if the producers of Dark Side of the Ring were to look outside the box, it can be done. This series has a greater potential to be done and shot than some sort of sitcom where you're dealing with so many more people on set. These are probably small crews. They can be small crews. The reenactments would be done with small crews. I think if Vice thinks outside of the box, they can make this happen. And in the world that we're living in right now, and how long it's going to take to produce things and how delayed everything is going to be, they should get on this. They should get on this fast and take advantage of nothing else debuting this fall. All right, back to wrestling now. That was my little rant about TV production. Okay, let's wrap things up with this story. We may now know why we haven't seen The Fiend on WWE TV since the last pay-per-view. Bray Wyatt and JoJo Offerman announced this week that JoJo has given birth to their second child, Hairi Von Rotunda. What a name. JoJo and Wyatt announced the birth of their first child, Nash 6 Rotunda, in May 2019. That is so close together for two babies to happen. I guess Bray really likes putting his Firefly into the funhouse. Yes, I said it. We're going out on that note. All right. Goodbye. I am going to break. We are going to come on back. Dave Meltzer is going to be coming up next. I didn't put any MMA news in here. Listen, I know there's news about McGregor. I know there's lots of news about Jon Jones. I will tackle that with Dave Meltzer coming up next, along with all of the wrestling news, including all of the Mike Tyson news. Yep, it's coming up next with Dave Meltzer right here. Stick with us. Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
You would not believe your eyes if 10 million fireflies.
Octo is an angry octopus. Usually he's quite surly.
What did you say to me?
But when he gets mad...
You ain't so smart, is yous?
He becomes angry.
Go home and brush your sister's hair.
It's been said that his sour attitude is due to a slight disagreement with the Great Lakes Brewers.
Those guys better have eyes in the back of their head.
They said they would use 8 ingredients and Octo's beer would be 8%.
But it ain't!
Octo likes the number 8.
What's not to like about it?
The Brewers apologized for the 8, but that made Octo more irate.
Hey, you wanna go me?
Nevertheless, there's still something likable about Octo.
Your hat looks like a toilet.
Well, sort of.
Sit down!
Octopus wants to fight by Great Lakes Brewery.
That's right!
It's time!
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider. With Dave Meltzer on Sunday night's main event.
Welcome back. It is time to chat with Dave Meltzer, the editor of the Wrestling Observer newsletter. And Dave, I've been saying already on the show, this might seem like a conversation ripped from 1998 because we're going to talk about Mike Tyson.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there was a lot of similarities there, other than it's 22 years later and it's, you know, things are very different as well.
Okay, so
very, very different.
So things are very different. In what aspect are you speaking of things are very different?
Mike Tyson's 53 years old.
True.
It's with a different company.
Yep.
I'm sure it's not costing him the amount of money to where you have to do 700,000 buys on pay-per-view to make it worthwhile.
Right.
It is part of a wrestling war.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the same.
Yep.
You know, and it was a very identical angle. I'm watching this going like, this is like, you know, the angle from 22 years ago, which was, you know, one of the most important angles, I think, in WWF history.
It was something that launched them into what we now call the Attitude Era with Tyson and that famous Cold Stone line, how much he loved Cold Stone.
I love that. And the great one was when they asked him, you know, about, oh, you were a big fan of wrestling growing up. And he says, I loved Bruno Sammartino. And that's when Bruno Sammartino's name was, like, completely banned from WWE television or WWF television at the time. And I just thought, like, I could just see, like, oh, my God, Vince McMahon just going crazy, but it's Mike Tyson, so what can he say?
Okay, and that still applies today, though, Dave, because I watch Chris Jericho out there on Wednesday night, and I'm watching Chris's brain on hyperactive here because he is trying to make this segment work with a man that is essentially uncoachable.
Yeah, there's no scripting him. everything he did was just like, what are you doing? And then he had this group of guys, you know, he had Henry Cejudo and Vitor Belfort and Rashad Evans, who all knew that they were not the focus. And then he had Gooch, you know, his actor friend, who tried to steal the scene. And, you know, it was quite a cluster. But at the same time, it's something to talk about. Yep. And, it's I don't know how good it will be. It's going to be Jericho's masterpiece angle if he can pull this one off, because he's not going to have a lot to work with, and he's going to have to think on his feet like he had to do on Wednesday.
So what is this angle? What do you see it being? Is it a boxing match like Mr. T and Roddy? Is it a tag match like WrestleMania 1? Like,
I don't know. And I don't know that they know completely. I think they probably have a good idea. I've got to think it happens. I'm sure in their mind, the way to do it would be like when fans can come back, but they may not, you know, who knows when that's going to be.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, if they could do Labor Day in Chicago, you know, I mean, that would be perfect. But, I mean, my gut is very strong, very, very strong that there's not going to be fans in any building in Labor Day in Chicago, and it's going to be in Jacksonville, which it just may have to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's a big play by AEW. Obviously, they're spending a lot of money to get this angle and to try to get attention. And, you know, they're at a certain level, and they're definitely satisfying their fan base, but they do also have to expand their brand and things like that. And, you know, I mean, it's good an idea to do that I could come up with, short of Conor McGregor. And Conor McGregor is going to be way more expensive. And I believe Conor McGregor, just because of, you know, I think that it would be WWE or bust for him. I just don't see him doing it with anybody else.
Okay, now I know it is impossible to ask you about the mind of Mike Tyson, but do you have any inkling as to what is happening? Because I continually saw on my social media feeds over the past week, Tyson Holyfield, Tyson Fury, Tyson Shannon Briggs. Like, is there a boxing match?
Tyson Vanderlei Silva.
Oh, I didn't see that one, so that one too?
One. Oh, yeah.
So what is this going? Is this a Saudi Arabia special to keep people company during the COVID? Like, is this going to happen beyond Jericho here, do you think? Because listen, as we all sit inside, there's a ton of money that people will fork out to see Tyson.
Yeah, I think so. Just out of that weird curiosity.
Yep.
I think that he'll probably, you know, do something with somebody. I think that, you know, Tyson Fury would be the worst idea in the world, unless it's just a play fight, in which case, whatever, that's fine. But, I mean, Tyson fighting, no matter what, Tyson fighting a serious fighter at 53 is just a horrible, horrible idea, as anyone fighting at 53 is. But, I mean, against Holyfield, I mean, that would just actually be sad. Wow. I mean, I think people would be interested, but I think it would just be sad. You know, with Vanderlei, I think it'd be really sad.
Yeah.
In professional wrestling, I think it's okay because, you know, you don't expose the myth. You know, no matter what the guy, no matter how hard he hits on pads, I mean, he wasn't even a good fighter at the end of his fighting career.
Right.
And that was a long, long time ago. And he's, you know, he's 53. Whether, you know, his body looks good or not, it's, nobody's a good fighter at 53.
So, I mean, if they do this, I'm just wondering about, you know, does AEW get to this first? Because if Tyson has a fight with any of these guys, whatever it is, will detract from the AEW angle if they wait to do it afterwards.
Yes. So there is a timing aspect for them to get the thing first. You're absolutely right. If he does something and looks bad, people will have their nostalgia fill with him.
Yep.
I mean, right now he's riding everyone's got that little nostalgia run that was like a super, you know, whatever. I mean, we've seen it with a million entertainment acts, you know what I mean, that they're really big, and then like 20 years later, they get that little six-month run. But it is short. You know, I mean, one of the problems with wrestling, as we both know, is that you do have that, and we've seen it with people coming back, but they do it so much.
Yeah.
And they do it to the point of detracting from the modern, because it's an easy crutch that does work, but then they overdo it. You know, with Tyson, I mean, Tyson's never had that, really. I mean, you know, he was on The Hangover and everything, but this is his, you know, thing. And so the timing of that is good. But still, I mean, when you know, he was not. It was not one of the big Google searches for the week, you know, or for the day even.
Huh.
And I thought it would be, and that surprised me. So it was not as big as it wasn't as big as I expected it to be. The rating, I wouldn't say the rating. I mean, well, the big surprise with the rating is that the Battle Royal was the high point, not the Tyson angle.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Also, about that show, it was a loaded show. Do you? We talked a lot about FTR and their potential debut, and they made the debut, but they did so on the same show as Tyson.
Yes.
That, to me, it overshadows what was the big play for the hardcore wrestling fan that they had been waiting for, and no one's now talking about the, you know, FTR debuting because it was on this Tyson show.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. I think that they just wanted to get it out there, and, you know, I think what happened is they wanted everything focused on this pay-per-view. Pay-per-view's over. Now it's like the mentality, okay, now we're going to start the news stories, we're going to focus on the next pay-per-view, and we're going to tease the stuff, and this is the big show after the pay-per-view. I think that they wanted, you know, because you got to remember also, this was going to be, the original plan was the pay-per-view in Vegas, and this was going to be Vegas, and they wanted the Vegas Dynamite show to be like this big blowaway show in Vegas, right?
Sure.
But this is kind of how it was planned out, sort of doing what they were planned, and I guess that, you know, FTR's debut was going to be on that. And, you know, the FTR thing, what hurt that is just there were no fans. I think their fan base, I think, would have gone nuts for the idea because it's been teased to that fan base for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
So I think they'd have gone nuts. But when it's just the wrestlers in the crowd, one of the things that I've noticed with the wrestlers in the crowd stuff is that, like, nothing dies because they're programmed to cheer, but nothing gets over because you don't get that emotional thing because they're just kind of like, they're doing their job to cheer as opposed to fans who are going nuts. It's a completely different thing. So, you know, there's going to be like no organic stars that sneak through, which is part of what makes wrestling is, oh, you know, like Chris Statlander in her first appearance when she was on Dynamite, and all of a sudden it's like this great reaction to someone that's like, wait, you know, wait, we got somebody here.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen. And like, it helps and it hurts. It helps in the sense that matches that might die in front of the live crowd aren't going to die because it's everyone's going to cheer no matter what. But that real big special thing. Oh my God! Did you hear that that reaction to The Rock? Some dude who's been in here in the business for a year. You know that's not going to happen because it's the other wrestlers that are cheering and they're going to. They're doing their job as fans as opposed to fans who are actually being fans.
AEW, though, is doing very well. It looks like they have strong numbers for the Double or Nothing pay-per-view.
Yes, maybe their biggest ever. In fact, probably their biggest ever.
That's surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, if you asked going in, I would have said that they were probably going to do their lowest.
that's a surprise, then.
but... You know, when you look back, I mean, where I wasn't sure was that that giant number UFC did, and I mean, the key to this, of course, with UFC, there's, you know, with the UFC, it's like there's no sports bars, so all the people who go with sports bar either have to not watch it or, you know, buy it illegally or buy it.
Yeah.
People aren't getting together. I think the deal with AEW is that people would go to AEW in groups, you know, groups of 5, 6, 7, and now they're not doing it, so maybe what used to be one buy is now 3 buys. In some cases. In other cases, that's not the case. But I do think that the increase is not so much that people are more excited about this pay-per-view than any other, as much as people aren't getting together as much, so therefore you're going to get more buys out of it, which is, you know, but it's still an encouraging sign, and especially for future pay-per-views, because I think it's, you know, the thing of pay-per-view being dead because of the economy, I mean, that's the one thing that there was fear of, is who's going to spend $50 in this economy for one night of entertainment, and the reality is that people have no qualms to do that.
Flipping on over to WWE, what is the controversy with Nia Jax and Kairi Sane? This is supposed to be something that's happening on Raw tomorrow night. Is it scheduled to air, and have you heard about this
injury? I don't know how it's going to air on television, you know, if it'll air in full, if it'll air edited, but Kairi Sane was hurt. Everyone told me it was not Nia Jax's fault, but everybody rushed to judgment on that one because, you know, Nia Jax has a rep and she's hurt people. So, I mean, I get it. I mean, if you told me Kairi Sane just got her head split open in a match with Nia Jax, I'd go, oh my God, not again. but it was, I guess she was supposed to take her, side into the ring steps. And, like, so her side went into the lower ring steps, maybe, and her head hit the upper ring steps. But her head hit the steps, and she got knocked silly and was bleeding. But everyone absolved Nia Jax. Now, we may watch on TV and go, oh, my God.
Right.
You know, maybe that's not the accurate description. But that is definitely the description that was going around. But at the same time, not that many people saw it. I mean, you had your 30 fans or whatever, your 30 wrestlers, and you had the people backstage. But you got to remember, the rest of the talent did not see it. They just heard about it because they're not really allowed backstage until their time.
Matt Riddle is on SmackDown, introduced by Kurt Angle, who is the same man that refereed a match that he lost, which I found very bizarre to be the endorsement.
Yep.
He's on SmackDown instead of on Raw, yet Paul Heyman loves this guy. Can we pull out of that that Brock Lesnar still has some issues?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's accurate. Or they just saw that they feel the need. I mean, he is a potential game changer. I'm not saying he will be, because I don't trust anyone as far as, you know, Vince McMahon at this point. I mean, Ricochet was the one that I thought was a can't miss, and what a miss, right?
Yes.
So now it's like, okay, he's a little bit bigger, and he's got a good physique. Ricochet had a good physique, too. And Ricochet is, you know, one of the most incredible wrestlers that there is around, and he's just whatever. And Ricochet got over in NXT. You know, Riddle's got unique charisma, and, you know, the one thing is they introduced him as like one of the new faces of SmackDown, which I thought was really interesting, because it was like that Drew McIntyre endorsement, which means you're going to get pushed really, really hard. You know, I mean, with Drew, it was too early when they did it. This is the early, very early Drew McIntyre, not the modern Drew McIntyre.
Yep, chosen one.
You know, the chosen one, right. So he's sort of a chosen one, which is a good sign that they're going to go pretty far with him. And that's a coup for SmackDown, because I think Raw, honestly, I think Raw needed a guy like that. I mean, they've been in there and they've tried with, you know, Aleister Black and you know, Drew and all this. And it's just, you know, maybe it's a no crowd thing, but, you know, it's, you know, Raw needs that charismatic new person bad. And they tried with, several others too, with and Ricochet being one of them, as a matter of fact.
Oh, speaking of Raw, we didn't even touch on this. What's your take on the plexiglass that has been set up? To me, this is something that WWE does for people to look at and view, and it's completely superficial, and it really doesn't change anything.
I don't even know the mentality behind it. I just saw it. I guess the idea is to keep front, you know, like one of those things for when they go back to arenas, where the audience can no longer touch wrestlers.
That I would understand, but at the moment,
it
makes no sense.
Where it has, I think it's just to teach people that this is the new look.
Oh.
It's, you know, it is. I think it's just new look. This is a new look of wrestling.
Gotcha.
We're changing wrestling, or we're changing the look of the television show. I think that's all there is to it. Because, you know, WWE, they make changes for the sake of change. But I think that this more, you know, when they go back to arenas and they do this, it's kind of like, you know, maybe people are just unsure of, you know, fans, you know, hugging wrestlers. And,
yes,
you know, I sort of get that.
Yeah, I get that. But I just, right now, what sense does it make? All right, UFC time, Dana White time. Two stories here that I want to touch on before we say goodbye. First of all, we've got, it's the two heavies. It's Jones and it's McGregor. John Jones and Dana White, social media pissing contest.
Yep.
Just spitting back and forth at one another. What is going on?
Yeah, you got two people who don't like to be called liars.
Who are both liars.
And yeah, it's gonna be a tough one. And the thing with John, you know, is John, you know, if John's released, John can make money. And
oh,
John
yeah.
has money. The one thing, you know, John has money. So, I mean, he could make a lot more money. But now, you know, he probably has it in his head. You know what? When Dana was talking, he wanted, you know, John's probably looking at these boxers and go, I'm a bigger draw than Deontay Wilder, which he is, and I'm sure better in my sport than he is in his, and my sport's drawing bigger than his, so why is he making, you know, five times what I'm making for a fight? And I can see that mentality, and I see a lot of people backing it up. You know, and the reality is UFC fighters are underpaid. I mean, that's the greatly underpaid.
If he wasn't such a horrible human being, I would feel for him. But his track record is just so bad, I can't. So bad. I mean, I can't bring myself to side with either one of these guys. I got nothing for either one.
I can't either.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, I mean, someone's lying big. I mean, this is not like there's disagreements of opinion. Like I'm worth this, you know, I'm worth this and I'm worth this. But Dana threw out $30 million. And John, you know, who admits to making over $5 million, you know, said like, "I'll fight for 15." Well, the nature of the UFC pay-per-view business right now is that he's not worth 15. However, boxing works is different, but that's a reality because to me, you're worth what you draw, and he's not worth 15 to UFC. Is he worth more than five? Yes, he is. But the number that he says he didn't even ask for a number. I think with Dana, the mentality is we just signed. See, here's the thing. They just signed John Jones to a new contract for a lot more money than he was making before. And whether it's been like one fight or whatever, Dana wants to put him in a rematch with Don McReyes because a lot of people think he beat Reyes. He wants to fight Jan Blachowicz, which is a lot easier fight for him. Then he brings up Ngannou, which is not an easier fight, which is a very intriguing fight. And the first thing that, you know, that he wants to renegotiate his contract because it's a more dangerous fight. And it's like, so from Dana's standpoint, you just signed. So I get Dana just going like, he doesn't really, of course, Dana used that for 3 years with St. Pierre. Remember, always, George doesn't really want to fight. Very clearly, George wanted to fight, but he wanted to fight for a certain amount of money. And they didn't want to pay that money. And then eventually, you know, they had a garden show and this and that, and they just felt they needed the main event, so they paid that money, and then they did, and then it went right back to the same thing where George doesn't want to fight when you know George and Khabib wanted to fight each other, and George and Conor would have been the biggest
match in
the history of that business, and for whatever reason, they were afraid George would win those fights, and the last thing they wanted was George to win and then retire, which he was going to do, so they never made those fights.
Well, that's my next question. Conor McGregor, now active on Twitter, which is just all evils, taunting Anderson Silva and taunting Georges St. Pierre. The idea of McGregor Anderson Silva is completely ludicrous. Looking at their size,
yes,
is
but I mean, at Anderson's age, maybe Conor thinks he's got a shot.
Maybe,
you know, Anderson's 45 years old. It is a big size difference.
Huge.
George, you know, George has retired for so long, like. If it was 3 years ago when we first were talking about Conor McGregor and George St. Pierre, I think George St. Pierre was winning that fight. Now I'm not so sure because it's you know, George is almost 40 and that's a big difference, and Conor's also suddenly bigger. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that makes Conor's younger, and Conor's a great striker. You know, if George's wrestling is what it was before, George would still beat Conor. You know, who knows today?
I'd still love to see it. We've talked about it a bunch. I've kept you too long, David. What's in the Observer this week?
Well, the issue that just came out was just like one of the better ones of the year with the Hana Kimura story. And just, you know, the Vince XFL story and... a lot more on Owen Hart, a lot more on Chad Gaspard, you know, just Tyson and everything. This week coming up, I don't know. I just, you know, I mean, who knows what's going to happen in the next 3-4 days? I do not have any great story, but I know something's going to happen.
Yeah, as it always does. Well, listen, Dave, thank you for joining us this week. Next week, we'll be live after the NXT In Your House pay-per-view. I'll chat with you then, and stay safe, my friend.
Okay, have a great week.
You too. Dave Meltzer right there. WrestlingObserver.com is where you can find all of his fine work, podcast, the Wrestling Observer newsletter, WrestlingObserver.com. A break we shall go to. Back coming up next, Joe Aguinaldo joins me. to get into it and chat about this week in wrestling TV. Taking a look back before we take a look forward, because next hour, Bartender Dave will be on to chat takeover in your house. It is all coming up on Sunday Night's Main Event. You're listening to it on TSN Radio.
If you like Dave Meltzer interview segments, you'll love WrestlingObserver.com. WrestlingObserver.com is your place for the latest pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Subscribers have access to hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter, plus daily podcasts, including a library of over 9,000 shows dating back to 2005. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
I'm Dan the Mouth of Ransom.
And I'm Joe Aguinaldo.
And we are the old f***s, two burnout wrestling fans that have been watching it since the 70s.
But now, All Elite Wrestling is here to make everything old new again.
So what better idea for a podcast to have it covered by two old crusty farts?
It's called All Elite Weekly, and you can listen to it by becoming a patron of Sunday Night's Main Event at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And you can bet we'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we're the old f***s, tough guy.
Give him some room, guys. Come on.
What is happening?
Jeff Hardy appears to be inebriated. The rental car agreement is in his name.
I quit drinking this.
Yeah.
So like
this is our job. We got a job.
Guys, give us space.
Might as well go for a soda. Nobody hurts and nobody cries. Might as well go for a soda. Nobody drowns.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event, and it is time to welcome on one of the co-hosts of All Elite Weekly. His name is Joe Aguinaldo, and I'm happy to have him as a co-host this week on the Sunday Night Show. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Jay, what is up?
Well, you staying safe, staying home?
Stay at home, except for once a week when I have to go in,
yeah,
but
you do.
For the most part, you know.
You do. All right, good stuff. Well, listen, Joe, you stay home. You are very active on the Facebook page and the Twitter world. And unfortunately, Joe, we're going to work our way backwards this week, which means we're going to start with talking about SmackDown. Are you okay with that?
I am fine with that. You know what? I'm just as a general overview, and I don't want to get too political here, but it has been a rough week. So.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I was just ready for some good old wrestling.
Okay.
And I think maybe part of the reason why I'm, for the most part, positive about most stuff is because I just needed to get away from all the crap that was going on.
Hey,
so.
And you know what, Joe? I think a lot of people feel that same way. And honestly, I don't know when the Jeff Hardy angle was taped, but it's not something that I needed to see at the beginning of SmackDown this week. Was it just me? And listen, I'm not saying that they went into race relations or anything like that, but just the fact that they had a police presence is not what I needed this week on my Friday night.
Way to segue into one of my negative things of the week. So,
that's where I bring you, Joe. Angry people want company.
Like, overall, in the grand scheme of things, I wasn't like it didn't bother me too much, like that angle with Jeff Hardy. Unfortunately, it didn't bother me though because like WWE has just had a history of doing these really bad taste things at the worst possible time. So when I saw this sort of thing come up, my immediate thought was, "Ah, WWE at it again." Like, you know what I mean? And I guess maybe I'm just callous to it now, or I'm just not paying as much attention to it. But generally speaking, I just thought, you know, it was a little tone deaf for that, for that particular segment at that particular time.
So also, here's another thing. If I just look at this removed from the police presence and sketch, and I look at it from a wrestling angle, why put out a tournament and have guys compete to get into the semifinals and then knock two out and not follow through with it? We've already seen on television, and I'm not even just going to pull from AEW and their TNT title tournament, but I found the NXT Cruiserweight title tournament very compelling due to the Rockstar Spud angle. So you've seen, in my opinion, success from that tournament. So why rock this one and disturb this one and make it meaningless?
Yeah, and I don't get it. And I mean, the other part for me too is, like, you know, you put you put two guys back in who lost already.
Right.
And it's like, I don't really want to see them anyways. Like, you know what I mean? Like if you're going to do like the, you know, we're going to have like, you know, what do you call it? Like, you know, alternates or whatever, then put true alternates in there, put the Usos in there or whatever, put, you know, Chad Gable or sorry, Shorty G or whatever. But the fact that they're like, well, you know, it's going to be like Sheamus or whatever it was, or sorry, Baron Corbin. I was like, really? Like, why? Like, I already saw them lose. I don't want to see them again, right? So, yeah, I was not. Oh, no, that was the Battle Royal. I just wasn't cool with, yeah, what they did with the tournament. Like, my problem is with Daniel Bryan, it was like maybe in 1970, the, you know, I'm a fighting babyface works. In 2020, it's like, yeah, dude, you're in the finals, man. Just go to the finals, right? Like, you wouldn't see Cody Rhodes do that. Right?
No, so you wouldn't. And there's something to be said about like that honorable babyface is in this particular situation. I don't necessarily think that it's that it applies. And the reason why, because let's face it, if it was if Daniel Bryan being the babyface was going to get a bye to the finals, but AJ was not, that would make it unfair for him to get through. So then the babyface saying, hey, you know what? Let's keep it fair. I want to wrestle Drew Gulak on my way or another opponent on my way to keep it fair with AJ. That would be fine. But you have a fair playing field if both guys go to the finals.
That, and that was my issue with what they did with that tournament. It was like, Daniel Bryan, what are you doing? Like, no, it just made him look kind of like wishy-washy. And I was like, I don't want to see Daniel Bryan like that. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see him kick butt, right? So that was, again, that was my issue with that.
To me also, the Battle Royal is such a crutch to go to here. You're using all the cliche aspects of professional wrestling. You're using the tournament and you're using the Battle Royal. And this actually goes across the board because we saw it in AEW as well. We've seen it in NXT. Now we're seeing it on SmackDown here. And it's just like, we're immediately going to a Battle Royal to fuel the cliche of the tournament. And don't get me wrong, I'm fine with the tournament. I wasn't fine with this tournament because this tournament didn't make sense stripping Sammy. In my opinion, it still should have been the Raw Women's title having a tournament done for it. So to me, they're just putting all of these obstacles in front of themselves when there are other obstacles that are presenting themselves that they could have put the obstacle over there. You know what I mean? Like, it's
so much. I gotcha.
So much, Joe. I'm so confused why they just don't follow through on what they had unnecessarily set up already. Man, this is convoluted.
Yes, it is. Now, that said, coming back to some positivity,
okay.
I didn't mind the Battle Royal too much. And you know what? Like, admittedly, even though I'm not the biggest, I wasn't the biggest Sheamus fan, the match with him and Daniel Bryan, I thought was pretty good. So, like, those two usually put on some good matches. So I didn't mind that. But yeah, like, but the thing is, to get to that point just didn't make any sense.
To get to that point. And then also the end of the match didn't make sense either because Jeff Hardy returns.
Yeah, that was my other part. It was like he came back and I'm like, okay, so, you know, let's use some common logic. If he's supposedly drunk, how did he get there? Did he drive? You know what I mean? Like, where did he come from? He looked injured. Like, why did they let him out of custody? Like, so many plot holes in this, right?
Well,
so,
I mean, my number one is why did they let him out of custody? And I get the feeling that he was not drunk. I'm sure he was, like, hit in the back of the head because Sheamus was hiding in the back seat. Like, something ridiculous like that is going to come out of this. Because, you know, they've primed up the angle with Hardy overcoming all his demons, and I don't think they're putting him back into that now. They're just playing off what they've done in all of those vignettes, and it all led up to this angle. All of that time, Joe, has led up to this angle.
Yeah, I'm going to say it was not well executed. How's that?
The other thing that we had happen on SmackDown was I guess we'll kind of get into this when we talk more NXT, but it was the introduction of Matt Riddle. Kurt Angle introducing Matt Riddle on the show. I was so confused, Joe, because Angle just watched Matt Riddle lose on NXT and is now presenting him like he's something really special on SmackDown. This isn't leaving a territory where the fans who have just watched him lose don't know what's happening in the new territory. This is one television show to another television show. It's different nights and different networks, but it's the same parent company. And I really didn't get this switchover of Matt Riddle, and I don't think an endorsement from Kurt Angle helps him.
You know what? I'm so glad you said that, because I was actually thinking about that before the show. You know, back in the day, the way that Matt Riddle lost on Wednesday is the way that you would normally go out in the old school territories, right? You go out looking at the lights, putting someone over,
sure.
You know, as you move forward. But yeah, he's just moving to Friday. And if you watch NXT, like a lot of people, you know, listening to this show do, then you kind of know, yeah, he's just going to SmackDown, right? And, you know, to have that sort of, that, you know, like the Kurt Angle thing where he's like, yeah, this guy's special. It's like, no, but you just submitted. You watched him submit in the pit thing, right? So I got what they were doing. I understand it from like an old school mentality. I just don't think that worked. I think, you know, if Matt Riddle is going to go to your big show, I think you want him to look strong coming up to SmackDown. So when he comes in, now Kurt Angle can say this, you know, he's special, you know, on his way out, he submitted somebody, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Just give him a bit of fanfare here, but like, no, he lost. So, you know, let's say I'm a casual fan watching this, I'm like, oh, Matt Riddle, let me check this out. And like the last thing, his last match, he lost a cage match. It's like, okay, then why is this guy a big deal?
Yeah, right? I don't necessarily know about having Timothy Thatcher lose, because that also can hurt him, and they do seem to be building him. But Riddle losing clean, going to sleep, and then coming up to SmackDown as a big deal, days later, Joe, like no removal, and having Kurt Angle endorse him here, maybe what they do here is they have someone come out, whomever his first competitor is going to be, Cesaro, maybe someone that can, you know, make him look good in the ring as well. And maybe Cesaro says, oh, you tapped out. Why are you even here? And then Riddle gets his revenge and taps him out to reset his character, something like that. Or what do you see them doing?
Well, whatever they do, they got to make him look strong coming in, right? Like whatever, like they can't just have him come in. Like, let's take your scenario with Cesaro and then have Cesaro and Nakamura, like, you know, punk him out. You can't do that,
no,
right? Like,
no,
he's got to come in and look good. But the only other thing I can think of too was like, you know, like don't bring him in right away. Like let him, yeah, like let it sort of build a little bit. Maybe do some vignettes, right?
Sure.
Or maybe, you know, maybe like you said, have Cesaro come out and say, hey, I heard this Matt Riddle guy's coming up, you know, don't even think about coming after me, because I'll beat you, like whatever, right? Just have him cut a couple promos on Riddle, and then finally have Riddle come in after say 2-3 weeks, you know, and you know, like sort of get his comeuppance against Cesaro, like just something strong. He's got to come in strong. That's, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, and because he is, I mean, to me, still so different than everybody else and just such a bona fide star. And we say this about, well, we don't say the so different, but we often say how great this guy could be when we watch them in NXT. And Riddle, once again, we say that, but does he transfer over to the main roster and make a difference? Also, I mean, this is his debut with no fans, Joe. This is a hard time to make that debut.
No, it's true. You know, and I like Dan mentioned that during the Wednesday podcast when we were talking about FTR, which I know we'll get into in a bit.
Yes.
But the other side of that coin, though, is that you don't know when fans are coming back.
True.
Right. So I think you do have to move forward strategically with things. My bigger problem with Matt Riddle coming up is, yeah, that guy, you know, like bro, like that kind of stuff will resonate, especially with a younger fan. Will they let him be Matt Riddle? That is the question.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a very good question, because you just got to let these characters be themselves when they do have an established character. And I think that's something that Matt Riddle does have. Now, it is curious, you know, that he is positioned on SmackDown as opposed to Raw, because Heyman is such a big fan. But maybe that has something to do with the Lesnar situation and Lesnar and him not enjoying one another. And, you know, Joe, I still want to see Matt Riddle and Bill Goldberg tussle.
I want to see that, too, actually. I've seen some of the backstage stuff between them, and it's like, it was like, yeah, I want to see those two. And you know what? Like, again, that storyline writes itself. You just show that backstage, like, altercation, let's call it, that they had. And, you know, you're off to the races. You don't need to do anything fancy about it. It's just, I don't like you. You don't like me. We kind of had words in the back. I'm not your bro. Okay, let's do this. Right?
Yeah. Not your bro.
Bro, yeah.
One final thing before we say goodbye to SmackDown and switch over to looking at Wednesday nights in the next hour is Otis and Mandy Rose. Now, I've been hypercritical on this show about Otis and Mandy Rose and how they do not look like a genuine couple. This week, they took it up a notch with a weird dream sequence that reminded me, and I don't know if you know this reference, Joe, but there was a sketch on SNL. It was a commercial parody, and it was in the 90s, and it was Schmitz Gay. It was a beer for guys who, if you love beer and you're gay, this is the beer for you. Now, I'm not saying that it's, you know, it's not a homosexual slash gay thing that they did, but the shooting style of this vignette with Otis and the kissing and was so over the top, it reminded me of something from SNL, but it reminded me in not such a good way, because I really don't know if this accomplished anything.
I have turned the corner negatively on this Otis Mandy Rose thing. Like, I was cool with it when they first started it, but man, it's just like that thing on Friday that they did. I kind of half watched it and was half reading a book at the time, just because it was like, okay, whatever, this is kind of dumb. I do get the reference that you're talking about, so I appreciate that. But yeah, I was not overly impressed with the Mandy Rose Otis thing at all. I'm pretty over it now. So like, that has become my, hey, I got to go to the bathroom. Great, Mandy and Otis are on. I'm gone. Right, so.
I just honestly don't know where it goes.
That's the problem, is that it's almost like they paid it off too soon, because like, really the payoff was they were going to get together.
Sure.
Okay. Now what, like, where do you go from here? It's not like they're going to, like, you know, I can't suspend my disbelief enough to know that I know they're not a couple, and it's like, okay, does Mandy turn on Otis? Does Tucker come back and do something dastardly? You know what I mean? Like, I'm just waiting for whatever's next in the storyline now, because it's like, we're done. Like, we've pretty much hit where we were supposed to go. And all right, it's over. Let's move on.
This does all come together if Mandy convinces Otis to give her the briefcase and she uses it. I've fallen in love with this idea. Perhaps it's me ruining anything else that happens for myself. But like, she uses the case to win the title from Bailey or something, and Otis is happy. And then Tucker says, "Well, she suckered you," and she doesn't care about Otis at all, but just sees this as an opportunity for her. And for those of you out there that say, "Well, that's the wrong briefcase," who cares? WWE makes up all their own rules anyway with the briefcases.
See, and you know what? If they did that, I would probably regain some interest in this storyline. But at this point, it's a bathroom break for me.
Yeah. All right. We need to take a break, Joe. We will come back on the other side and get the top of the hour with your specialty. We'll talk some AEW and NXT, and we'll dive back into Raw as well, because we have to. You are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event, and doing so on TSN Radio.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Thanks for listening to the free version of Sunday Night's Main Event. Well, that was just hour one, but if you want hour two, then please sign up to our Patreon, patreon.com/SNMEradio. It's just $1 a week. You get the full 2 hour show, commercial free, and along with that, all of our bonus podcasts that include the Midweek Markout, All Elite Weekly, Sunday Morning Trivia, and Dan Lavransky's Music Show. All of that comes to you for just $1 a week. So go get it right now. Patreon.com/SNMEradio.